Hello, Jeffrey.
Hey, just have a drink of water.
I heard that you have some concert tickets booked.
You know what? The last couple of shows that I've been to, I missed out on going to Tool last year before the Ottawa All-Star game because I got... Remember that podcast where I was really sick and I was barfing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one. I was supposed to go to Tool that night, couldn't make it. So I think the last concert I saw before that was either Nine Inch Nails or Tool. And yesterday, bought concert tickets, bud. You know what I'm going to see?
Who's that?
I'm going to see the Wiggles. Yeah, I'm taking the kids to go see the Wiggles in September. Yeah, I know.
God.
That's the life of a parent. TJ turns 3 next month. He loves the Wiggles, so dad's taking him to see the Wiggles.
I have a 3-year-old as well, as you know, and yep. I can't even envision taking her. I can't imagine taking her to a movie, let alone a concert. But I guess at a concert like that, you're jumping around and doing shit, right?
Yeah,
I
the mean, kids
like,
are off.
That's how it works.
Yeah, the kid. I guess this is maiden voyage for me, right? My kids are 3 and a year and a half. So what do I know about being a parent? This is the first show that we're taking them to. So they're probably Brody's probably going to sit on his mom's lap. I'll sit beside mom, and TJ's going to want to go and dance with the kids at the front of the stage.
Familiar with the Wiggles music, sir?
A little bit. Big Red Car is a favorite.
Wiggles, yeah, Wiggles Big Obure.
Fruit Salad is a good tune. I don't know if you can groove on that. That's kind of a nice summer song. Is good. Those are probably two of my favorites. Yeah.
Oh
yep.
My God. Do you feel emasculated at all by this whole thing? Do you
no.
feel like no? You're looking forward to the concert?
I am very much looking forward to the concert, and I'm looking forward to spending a weekend in Hamilton. That's what we're going to do. We're going to rent a hotel room and stay in Hamilton.
Because I have to admit that having seen the Wiggles a few times on TV, it makes me uncomfortable in a kid-touching kind of way.
Why? Really?
It does.
The Wiggles make you that uncomfortable?
Yeah, like some in one of their cars undoubtedly is rope and wine coolers.
In the back, really?
Yeah, in the back, yes.
And those flavored cigarettes we were talking about on the podcast a couple of days ago?
The flavored cigarettes as well. All right, well, I'm doing the show from New York City here at the Yahoo HQ. Merrick is in studio in Toronto. Coming up on the show in a few minutes, Phil Bork. He of the Penguins Radio Network to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Ottawa Senators heading into their explosive Game 2. I saw a stat today, I think, that said that the Penguins have not won a Game 2 in a few consecutive series.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
News to me.
You're going to get them. Get them now.
Ottawa looked snoozy in that first game, boy. I'll tell you. It wasn't a great game, but Ottawa really looked tired. Alfredson looked tired. Erik Karlsson looked like he didn't know how to pivot as a defenseman anymore. Paul McLean has had a couple of days now to figure it out and reconfigure things for the Sens. We'll see what they throw at the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. But hopefully it'll be a better game because the first one was kind of a snooze and went completely the way of the Pittsburgh Penguins. They just showed them like what a team of depth can do. You know what I mean?
Right. All right. And joining us now on the line, he is a former National Hockey League player and a man who knows a thing or two or about a thing or two about the Pittsburgh Penguins. He is Phil Bork, kicking us off on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast today. Hello, yeah. Phil. How are you?
I'm doing well. If I don't know it, I know people who do know it.
I like that. I know
people who know people.
I think I may have to. I may have to steal that one, Phil. Consider that one appropriated. Hey, yeah, we were just talking a couple of seconds ago. Wish and I, game one, kind of a snoozy affair. I mean, that may just become. You know, the Senators are coming off a pretty emotionally charged series against the Montreal Canadiens. Pittsburgh's coming off of one. Kind of got a couple of scares in there against the New York Islanders. What do you expect for Game 2 tonight?
Well, first, I expect the Ottawa Senators to be significantly better. I think they're going to try to push the envelope as far as the physical play, especially on Malkin and Crosby. I expect Craig Anderson to try to have his best game. But I also expect the Penguins to be better. I'm talking to some of the players after the morning skate today. A lot of them felt like that first-round series against the New York Islanders was a bit of a kind of a punch in the face because the Islanders, I think, have surprised a lot of people, but also a bit of a learning lesson, especially when it came to game number two, because game number one went pretty easy for the Penguins, winning 5-0, and then all of a sudden, whack, they got knocked by the New York Islanders and made that series 1-1. So they realize they can really put the pressure on Ottawa by winning game number two and going up 2-0, and that's going to make Ottawa have to win 4 of the next 5.
Obviously, the adversity that the Penguins faced in that Islanders series was tied directly to the adversity that they faced in goal. What has Thomas Vokoun done for the Penguins?
He just stabilized things. Marc-Andre Fleury, a lot of people want to just seriously tie Marc-Andre Fleury to a bumper, man. It's kind of tough to hear because Marc-Andre Fleury actually made some huge saves when he played, but all that anybody sees on the highlight reels are the ones that went in off of him, and I'm not letting him off the hook either. I mean, he had some goals go by him that really should never have gone into the net, and that's why Thomas LeCun was signed by the Penguins, is because there were some goals last year against the Philadelphia Flyers that shouldn't have gone into his net. But with all that being said, what Thomas LeCun is just settled things down. That the Penguins were too scrambly defensively. So not only by having him in the net has he performed well, but also I think a lot of the players took it personal upon themselves that, hey, I'm a big reason why our number one goaltender is sitting there with a baseball cap backing up. Is he to blame a little bit? Yes, he is. But also, the Penguins have been better defensively in front of Thomas LeCun. But I give a lot of credit to Thomas LeCun, the way he's come in and just been incredibly professional and sound and just really relaxed in the cage.
And now, you know, with these two realities, one, that Thomas LeCun has come in and settled everything down, and two, that Marc-Andre Fleury, regardless of how LeCun has played and will play, is still the number one goaltender for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Is this a scenario, Phil, where you think that it's, if you win, you're in with Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. And I think that even if Thomas LeCun lost, I don't think it's an automatic that Marc-Andre Fleury goes right back in, depending on how he lost. If he lost the game, how he lost it, I think has something to do with it. But for Marc-Andre Fleury, he's going to get that chip on his shoulder again. He had it in 09, obviously, winning a cup. And I noticed it in practice. And I'm not seeing it in practice, to be quite frank with you guys right now, that I'm not seeing that attitude in practice. That if I'm the coach and I'm standing on the ice watching a guy who, you know, should be sending a message to me that if LeCun stumbles a bit here, I'm showing you I am ready. Technically, I am sound, and mentally I'm sound, and I want to get back in there and show you that the goaltender you saw last year against Philly and the goaltender you saw this year early on, that's not me. I'm a lot better than that. I'm not seeing that from Marc-Andre Fleury right now from practice. Will I see it moving forward? Possibly. But in the meantime, Thomas LeCun, it's his net to lose right now.
Where did it go wrong with Fleury? Like, what's happened in the last 2 years where this guy all of a sudden can't keep it together in the postseason?
I don't know. That's the million-dollar question. I don't know, because he seems to have another level of maturity each year. Nobody can argue his abilities and his reflexes and the amazing way he's able to stop pucks in key situations. And I thought he had one of his best seasons this year. I don't know. You know, it was very well known that he had his first child, a baby girl. And most players that I've played with, when they have a child, they go to another level. It's motivation for them. Even if they were up all night helping their wife give birth, they'll show up at the game and they'll have the game of their life. Marc-Andre Fleury has actually taken a step backwards since his daughter was born. It doesn't make any sense to me. I never had kids when I played, but I always thought, man, if I had a child born while I was a player, I would just be shot out of a cannon. I'd want my child to look back at that time when he or she was born and say, man, Dad, I was born and you went to this new level and I was a part of it. It was cool that you were motivated by me. I'm not seeing that from Marc-Andre Fleury, which is really a head-scratcher.
Wow.
Meanwhile, some of the other headlines around Pittsburgh, some of the acquisitions doing very well, thank you very much. Headline by Jerome Iginla. Your thoughts on his performance in the playoffs for the Pens?
Jerome's been great. Averaging a point a game, he's just been tremendous. What I love about Jerome Iginla is number one, you spend 3 minutes talking to Jerome Iginla, you know how great of a guy he is, and he's just been amazing in the room, what kind of person he is. But also, I think it's a relief for him that when you think about it, when you play the Calgary Flames in years past, if you were part of the opposing team, coach or player, you took a red Sharpie marker and you circled that board, let's take out Jerome Iginla. Let's be hard on Jerome Iginla. Let's put our best players against Jerome Iginla. He's not that guy anymore. It must be just a relief to him that he can be that secondary guy. That, you know, this is Sidney Crosby's team, and this is Evgeny Malkin's team. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you have Jerome Iginla too. So the pressure's not on him to have to be the guy every single night. So I think that he's just been able to go out there and just play and play to his strength, which is being a great leader on and off the ice, and being super on the power play and just being a top six forward and chipping in here and there whenever needed.
And how do you think Sid has played since he's come back from his jaw, wearing that super shredder mask? He looks very stately in it. Yeah. How do you think Sid's gone?
Sid's been great. He's getting a little bit better every single day. I think he's adjusting to having to wear that contraption around his
good
jaw.
Word for it.
I think his face-offs have suffered a little bit because, you know, Sid doesn't win a whole lot of face-offs clean. It's usually his second effort. So that means he's digging pucks out of his feet, and it seems to have a little bit of trouble with that, that he's dipped below 50%, which never happened to him before. But I think his battle level has been great, that he's fearless still, even though Chris Neal gave him a whack across the jaw in that contraption the other night, that he almost expects it. He knows it's coming. He's going to he's still going to get his nose in there, and if he takes one off that mask, and he understands it's playoff hockey. So I think he's been tremendous.
Joined by Phil Bork, color analyst for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Tonight it is game two, the Ottawa Senators and the Pittsburgh Penguins. When you look at this Pittsburgh Penguins team, you know, you focus a lot on the big names, 87 and 71 and Chris Letang and Marc-Andre Fleury. But the one guy that I personally, mea culpa here, Phil, have missed the boat on completely is Pascal Dupuis. And when they picked him up in the Atlanta deal, I thought, okay, third line checking guy, that's all he's going to be. He is so much more than that. You played the game. From a player's point of view, what impresses you most about Pascal Dupuis?
Wow, I can't boil it down to one thing because we could do a whole segment just on him. My favorite player on the team, the big reason is I was an undrafted player, and he was also an undrafted player. I just love the way that his game has continued to grow and excel from a mucking, grinding, penalty killer, third, fourth line guy now to arguably a top six forward on all 30 teams in the National Hockey League. 20 goals this past season, tied with Patrick Sharp this year with 6 in the playoffs, 25 last year, all 25 even-strength goals. His skating, obviously, is the thing that jumps off the ice at you, but the big shot that he has, the playmaking abilities that he has, his penalty killing, he's got to be one of the top 10 penalty killers in the whole league. But I actually talked to him the other day, and he talked about his conditioning and how great his conditioning is, and a lot of it has to do with sitting right near Sidney Crosby in the locker room, talking to Sid all the time, asking questions about playmaking at a very high level and getting that feedback from Sid. But also, the last 2 years, he has trained with Sidney Crosby in the offseason. So his conditioning has gone to such a level now that great skating ability that he's had, guys, is as effective at the beginning of a shift as it is at the end of a shift. And that's where a lot of his skill is able to excel, is because of his great wheels.
Last one for me, Phil, and thanks for joining us on the program today. On the other side of the bracket, you have the New York Rangers and you have the Boston Bruins. Which team do you think gives the Penguins, assuming they advance, a tougher series?
I'm sorry, guys. I'm not going to answer that.
Oh.
And I'm being serious. You can chuckle, but I've been asked that question so many times, and please don't be offended. But the last 2 years, we did not get out of the first round, and we kept thinking past the Tampa Bay Lightning, past the Philadelphia Flyers. And I tell you, I'm just so gun-shy about even talking about going past game number two that, you know, our mantra here in Pittsburgh really has been just win 4 games and you'll have the privilege to play on to another round. So I'll watch the Rangers and the Boston Bruins, but as far as looking past this round,
well,
I'm not going to do it.
Rephrasing it, sir. Who do you see coming out of that series? who do you see coming out of the Rangers-Boston series?
I'm actually thinking the Rangers are going to come out. I know that was a tough loss for them last night in OT, but I think if they can get Richards and they can get Nash going, which is probably a tall task for John Tortorella, but, you know, Henrik Lundqvist is an elite goaltender. I think he's going to battle. I think they're going to split in Boston. I think it's going to go 7 games. I wouldn't be surprised if all 7 games go to overtime, but I'm taking the Rangers.
All right, then the last one from this, Mike, Phil, and again, appreciate your time today. Outside of Craig Anderson, which is the obvious answer, what is most potentially dangerous for the Pittsburgh Penguins in that Ottawa Senators lineup?
Would be Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson has the ability at the flip of a switch to be a game breaker, a difference maker. And I think the Penguins are going to pay. They paid some attention to him in game one, but they'll do even more of that in game number two and be more physical on him. He's a guy that worries me the most when he's on the ice because effortlessly that he can, in two strides, be behind your defenseman on a great scoring chance, and then in two strides he can be back defending. So to me, he's the most dangerous player on the ice for the Sens.
All right, Phil Bork, radio guy, Pittsburgh Penguins. Dude, thanks again for joining us on the program, and hopefully we'll talk to you next round.
Hopefully. Got my fingers crossed as I'm knocking on wood. I enjoyed it, guys.
Thanks, Phil.
Phil Bork. Boy, you could take the player out of the game, but you can't take the game out of the player, huh?
It's so funny because I watch, I mean, obviously working at Hockey Central, I watch games with a number of different people, with general managers, with players, ex-coaches, the whole deal. And everyone kind of watches the game in their own, you know, unique way and finds unique things that they like and don't like about the game or they observe about the game. But watching a game with players is one of the most unique things you'll ever do. Like, really, it's one of the blessings about working in this job and for as long as I've been able to do it. You never learn more about how the game is played, both from, you know, the physical point of view and sort of, you know, the X's and O's and coaching and all that kind of stuff, too, and how a player reacts. But also, you know, mentally getting yourself in the game. Like, which it's one of the great things about, you know, our little perch in this industry is we get to watch games with hockey players. And if you've ever, anyone out there, if you've ever had a chance to sit down and watch an entire game with a hockey player, you know what I'm talking about. They just allow you to see the game differently, and the way that they react emotionally is unlike how a fan reacts. You know, none is more legitimate or authentic. That's not the point that I'm trying to make, is it's just different. And you're right. A lot of the guys, you know, have a hard time getting themselves out of that team mentality. It's and some guys never do. And some guys absolutely never do. And some coaches are never do. And look at the way Don Cherry, even he never even coached the Toronto Maple Leafs, but he's still, you know, the first one waving the flag. It really is a unique phenomenon.
Indeed it is. All right, with that, let's start the show proper.
Oh, that. Right. Okay.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
We're going to get corner offices out of this one for sure, Greg.
Right away, your BS detector should go off.
Why do I know this crap? What's wrong with me? Are you insane?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You and I are not quite that dissimilar.
La 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 la, hockey, hockey, hockey.
Seattle is playing excellent defense these days.
What does that even mean?
Debate hockey.
So much junior hockey knowledge in that big juicy brain.
Oh, yeah.
Pop culture.
See, I kind of look at our podcast here like Jazz Odyssey.
There's some bloggers that are great, that are entertaining, that are factual. It's fabulous.
Damn right, JD.
And more hockey.
Just what we need to shoot off the side of the barn. That's how I developed my wrist shot, shooting frozen cow patties in Lloydminster.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Merrick versus Wyshynski, huh?
Indeed.
Huh?
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the program. I am here at Yahoo headquarters at the corner office thing. Jog my memory. So far, so good, Merrick, but I think I've committed an office faux pas.
Yeah, what'd you do? You booked the wrong room?
I thought that the room booked for me was one room, and it turned out to be another. I've set up shop in a room that I have been in before, and it may be the wrong room. So far, so good, but I may have to pull the parachute cord at some point.
You think you may get punted, eh? That's how much stroke this podcast has around Yahoo headquarters.
Yeah, I know.
It should be like, oh, look, Greg Wyshynski's in there. He's the guy that does that podcast. No, don't talk to him. And don't look at him in the eye. Just, you know, avert your gaze. Just look at your shoes. You know, mumble something politely. Hello, Greg. Just don't look at him. You know,
yeah,
if you want to, you know, maybe please go get him a cup of coffee. You know, just don't, that's Greg Wyshynski in there. Oh, don't stare too long. Don't stare too long. He's doing the podcast.
I keep all the shades down, you know, don't want to be bothered by the riffraff.
No, of course not.
Of course not.
Don't be bothered by the unwashed masses. Well, if they washed, it would be a different thing. But the unwashed
it
masses,
would be
no,
a much
no
different thing. Yeah. Thursday night hockey, ladies and gentlemen, the Boston Bruins with an overtime victory. Brad Marchand, first goal of the postseason, and a 3-2 victory over the New York Rangers. After the game, Henrik Lundqvist expressing some frustration, Merrick,
yeah,
with the Rangers' inability to score in overtime. But then again, Henrik didn't exactly have his strongest game, I thought, in game one of that series.
You didn't think Lundqvist was that good?
Stop
really?
Shots, but it wasn't. He wasn't. Listen,
I thought he was
when
awesome.
The bar. Hold on. When the bar is Game 6 of the Capitals series.
Yeah. That's fine.
Don't. You know what I mean? He didn't reach that bar.
No, but then he wasn't letting in. You know, who scored that goal?
For Boston?
The 30-footer that went underneath Tuukka Rask yesterday. I mean, it wasn't as if he let in one like that.
No, he didn't. He didn't. He didn't. He wasn't the reason.
I thought he was good. I thought he was really, I mean, there was a lot of times when Boston was throwing heavy metal at him, and he was fine, and he was the reason they hung in there. I was really impressed with Lundqvist yesterday. I really was. And he did the mea culpa, and we got a really unique look into a goaltender's brain when he sort of broke down what he needed to do on that play with Patrice Bergeron coming down the right side, and he said that he totally didn't see Brad Marchand. Mm-hmm. I guess he was being hidden by Matt Zuccarello, if that's even possible. Actually, Zuccarello was trailing, and Marchand threw him down like he was a dwarf from the Wizard of Oz. But he broke down, so what he needed to be looking at, how he needed to play. It's a standard play. It's a standard, east-west play for a goaltender. And he brought up the point that he's awful in overtimes. And we went back and looked at his record. I think he's something like 6-15 in overtimes. So that's in the back of his mind. The fact that he can bring that up and draw that out in an interview, I'm awful in overtimes, really tells you something about Henrik Lundqvist in overtime. It's in the back of his mind. He's always thinking, I'm awful in overtime. That's a bad way for a goaltender to be, don't you think? To go into OT saying like, oh man, my record stinks here.
Totally. I saw a question somebody put out this morning about Marchand, and I didn't quite get it. Okay. Someone actually asked, would you take Brad Marchand on your team? Is that a point of debate?
Everybody would. Are you kidding me? Right? Not just because he's a good hockey player, Wish, but how does he get away with the stuff that he does? Like, how is he? He's always in the scrums. He's always doing something, whether it's a helmet over a guy's head, quick little rabbit punch. Oh, how about the cowbell yesterday on Derek Stepan, eh? Right up in between the legs. Boom! The separator, as Harry Neal used to call it. Yeah. How does he get away with, he always gets away with it. He's like the sneakiest dirty guy going, and he's got a high skill level as well.
Well, yeah, and again, first goal of the playoffs, but a pretty important one at that for Brad Marchand in that game. Rick Nash, another assist. Now he's got 3 assists for the playoffs and no goals.
Did you?
6 shots on goal in game 1 against Boston.
Where were they all from? I mean, because Julian had Chara on the ice every time Rick Nash was out there, and Nash would come down the side, he'd see 33 and just throw it at the net.
Yep.
This is like empty calorie shots. It's like, all right, just throw it at the net.
Yeah, exactly. And I think now the goal scoring at some point has to be a point of concern, right? You figure? I mean, this is yet another game where Rick Nash goal makes the difference.
Totally.
And we've yet to see one yet in 8 playoff games for the Rangers. It's not as if he's not trying. As if he's not getting he's putting shots on goal. They're not really quality chances, but the shots nonetheless. He is helping out that line to score, no question about that. Assists and sometimes just being in the right space for a screen or whatever. But the guy was bought in to be the difference maker in games like this with a goal.
Yeah.
And he hasn't scored one yet.
Having a hard time against Dano Chara. He's not the first person to find out how hard it is to play against Dano Chara.
It sounds like a Phil Kessel apologist over here.
Kessel got 4 goals. He got 4 tucks in that series, didn't he?
I know. But that was the argument for Kessel before he blew up in that series was you try scoring against Zdeno Chara. Then, of course, he starts scoring against Zdeno Chara, and nobody's making that argument anymore.
Yeah. Does this series strike you as 1st-to-3?
Oh, that's a good call.
Is that going to feel that way for this series? Does to
it,
me.
It might be. You're right. I agree with Phil Bork. I think the Rangers are coming back in the series, obviously, because I picked them. But I think it's going to be, it might be 1st-to-3. You might be right. It's going to be a real tight series. And that game was a good atmosphere last night. The other one, there are just some fan bases that you want to give them a big hug. You want to give some fan bases a big hug.
Where was your big hug for the Maple Leafs fans after their collapse?
Well, they're beyond help. A big hug doesn't mean anything for them. Like, that's decades, right? Like, that's a hug that needs to last 40 years, right? The 40-year hug. But the Sharks fans, it's been like, the last decade or so, last 12 years maybe. And this is just another chapter in the sad existence of the San Jose Sharks in the playoffs. Just when you think they've got the corner turned and life is different, you get this. You get the Los Angeles Kings scoring 2 goals in 22 seconds with the San Jose Sharks taking 2 penalties in the span of 22 seconds.
Yeah.
And, Yeah.
And
they
the
lost.
Way, and the way, oh God, I know. It was so bad. And the way that it happened with that awful call that I think we're all on the same page that we all hate, that Mark Edward Vlasic puck over the glass call.
Well, let's go off on a little tangent here, because here's the thing with the puck over the glass, and I do see the other side of the argument. I mean, essentially, you and I are in agreement on it being a bad penalty, and one that's not worth a two-minute minor. But there is something to be said for it having been a deterrent. You don't see players clearing the puck over the glass all that much anymore intentionally because they know they're going to get a penalty for it. That said, the idea that you would give a two-minute minor for what amounts to a mistake, a goof, a blooper, a puck on edge that a defenseman did not intend to put over the glass, but rather off the glass.
Or you're leaving a big one out here.
Which is?
Bad ice.
Bad ice?
Like on a clean sheet of ice, a lot of pucks that just hit the glass on that high glass clearing play are going over because late in the game, that ice is all chewed up. And to your point, the puck is bouncing, the puck is on its edge, and it's going off the glass. That's a penalty? Come on.
I don't appreciate that being a penalty. I wish it was treated like icing. At best, maybe. And you had an interesting idea, actually, as to what they could do with it instead of a two-minute.
You like this one? This has been a plank of mine for a while now. And I've thought about not just with the puck over the glass, but other penalties as well in various zones as well. Why does every tripping call have to be 2 minutes? Why does every hooking call have to be 2 minutes? And why does it have to be 2 minutes for flipping the puck over the glass? Considering a lot of people don't like this thing, teams, players, general managers, coaches, fans. Let's not forget about fans who don't like this automatic call. Why does it have to be 2 minutes? In a way to satisfy both, because the NHL has stiffened their spine on it, okay? They've planted the flag. This rule is staying. Why not just make it a 30-second penalty or a 45 or at most a one-minute penalty? Yeah. If you have to have it, why make it so severe that, to your point, Greg, an accident or something because of bad ice, a puck that skips up on its side, why does that have to be a two-minute penalty? Why don't you just make it a one-minute penalty or a 30-second penalty?
It's not a bad thought. I mean, I think maybe the concern is that you overcomplicate matters, and now all of a sudden you have people trying to keep track of penalty time and that kind of thing. And it could get kind of a little bit confusing, I think, for new fans. Let's be honest with you.
So just make it a minute then.
No, but I think
there's 5 minute penalties or 10 minute penalties. There's 2 minute penalties. What about a minute penalty?
I don't know. It's not a bad thought, and I think that there might be some middle ground there if you are someone who believes it should be penalized as a way to keep delay of games from happening. Now, the other part of the counter argument to this idiotic rule, and again, I will always get back to the one instance that I saw that makes this rule a laughingstock, which is the one time that I saw Matt Cook get a delay of game penalty for shooting the puck over the glass on the other end of the ice as he stood on his own goal line.
I saw a goal in the AHL get that once. Actually, I think it was Justin Pogge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. That's totally what he intended to do.
Yeah.
The counter argument is that power plays are good for hockey. And that when you get bad ice, when you get tired defense, and when you get mistakes made in overtime, especially, you're going to get delay of game penalties, you'll get power plays, and you'll get games to end. So the counter argument is it is beneficial to the National Hockey League to have a call like this that is. And the other thing that people love about it is the fact that it's cut and dry. There's so much gray area in the league when it comes to penalties.
I love that.
This is
though.
One where if you either, puck's either over the glass or it's not.
Yeah.
Right? So people like that. They like the fact that their power plays in situations that could potentially end a game in overtime because of the bad ice, tired defenseman. Yeah. And they also like the fact that it is a deterrent to defensemen just clearing the puck over the glass willy-nilly. But I come back to the fact that it is essentially a penalty for a mistake, and a non-intentional one. A non-intentional mistake, which I think is a mistake. I don't think it's kind of an intentional mistake. But the point is that I don't like the fact that you're penalizing that in the league.
I'm with you on that one. And here, so the question about, you know, it encourages power plays and more goals by extension. The question you need to ask yourself as a hockey fan is, do you want this game to be a special teams game? Like, is that what you want it to be? Or do you want it to be primarily a 5-on-5 game? Like, we always harp, well, some of us, not me so much. Well, a lot of people harp on the shootout because it doesn't replicate 5-on-5 play.
Right.
But either does the power play. Now, I know that there's a wide chasm between the shootout and a 5-on-4 power play, and I get that. But I think the fundamental question you need to ask yourself is, how much 5-on-5 play do you want in hockey versus how much special teams do you want? How much do you want this to be a special teams game? Like, of the 20 minutes in each period, how much of it do you want to be 5-on-5? That's the question you need to ask yourself. Do you want just to be all special teams? Just power, we go, this team gets a power play, then you get a power play, then you get a power play, then you get a power play. Or do you want long stretches of 5-on-5 play? That's a question that every hockey fan needs to ask him or herself.
So the Sharks lose this game in heartbreaking fashion. Dustin Brown on the power play, then Trevor Lewis on the power play. On it. Did you get a chance to watch that goal again, Lewis goal?
Yeah.
And what'd you think?
I don't like the way Niemi played it.
Yeah, I think Niemi misplayed that puck.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah. Now, granted, Pavelski needs to get back on the back check there.
True.
A little bit to make sure Lewis doesn't just slam dunk that puck in. But at the same time, it was Niemi kicking that puck pretty much directly to Lewis.
You could feel the vibe of what was happening, though, at that time. Like, couldn't you just feel that momentum? That black and silver momentum. Like, you just knew it was going to happen. Like, you just knew in overtime of Boston. You just knew Boston was going to score that goal. And you just got that feeling, no matter what was on the clock, that L.A., this thing was not going to overtime. L.A. was going to win this thing.
Yeah.
It was just going to happen.
So how do the Sharks come back from this? Can they come back from it? Or do you think this is yet another? Well, there's two questions, really. Can the Sharks come back from this? And or... Is LA just too good right now?
LA is.
I mean,
are they
just locked in like they were last
year? LA is. LA is locked in. This is where you rely on your veterans, right? Like, this is where, you know, you talked, was it 2 days ago on the podcast about, you know, filling your room up with rings?
Uh-huh.
Like, this is where those guys come in handy, isn't it? Like, isn't this the place where, okay, we're down 2-0, we had the Los Angeles Kings, we're going back to San Jose with a split, and then this happened. Isn't that the exact moment where you need guys that have been there before?
Yeah.
In that room. Like, isn't that exactly what you were talking to Adam Oates about before he poo-pooed it?
Yep.
This is the exact same spot. That's why I'll say to that point, it all depends on the quality of your veterans at that point.
I think the Sharks aren't done. I think they go back to the tank and even this thing up, but that's just me hoping that this is going to be yet another annal in the tome of disaster that is the San Jose Sharks in the playoffs.
What they need to do, and they haven't done it yet, is, and I'll focus specifically on 88, they have to get bodies in front of Jonathan Quick. He saw so many pucks last night, like, clear. And isn't that one of the reasons why Brent Burns is a winger? Like, don't you want that body in front of the net? Like, it's kind of, I mean, Quick is looking fantastic. Again, he's been playing tremendous, but he hasn't had to face a whole lot of screenshots. On the other end of the rink, all that Antti Niemi knows is Dustin Penner has a big ass. Because right in front of him, every time he's out there. Right?
Right,
but is Jonathan Quick seeing butts? Nope. Mm-mm. He's not seeing two live crew video. Not at all. It's clear. Wide open.
Do you mean a Sir Mix-a-Lot video? Sir?
Oh, that's Sir Mix-a-Lot. That's
yeah,
big butt.
Please.
Okay.
Two live crew had some beautiful butts.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah.
Sir Mix-a-Lot then. Yeah. I apologize. Bad reference.
Yeah.
But I'm a hockey guy. What am I gonna do?
Yeah. You're a white guy. Be honest.
Got the overbite. The white man's overbite when I dance and everything too. I'm going to see the Wiggles.
Yeah,
talk to
true.
Me with Sir Mix-a-Lot, okay?
Yeah, you have no hip hop cred now. Daniel Burke writes in, if it's an accident to shoot the puck over the glass and the penalty should be less severe, why not a less severe penalty for someone trying to lift a player's stick or accidentally splitting their nose open? Or who accidentally puts a stick between a player's legs and trips them? I agree with you that the penalty is goddamn stupid, but you can't penalize based on accidents or not because you're introducing
all of
even
those,
more judgment calls, and that is not a good idea.
All of those penalties that gentleman just cited, what's his name?
Dan Burke.
All those penalties that Dan just cited are all fouls against another body.
Mm-hmm.
This is a foul against a sheet of glass.
But essentially, here's the thing, but you're making my point, Dan. In all of those cases, it's a judgment call. It is a judgment call. You judge whether or not a player accidentally tripped somebody. You judge whether a player accidentally did XYZ. I mean, the referee's discretion is in full effect in all of those cases.
Mm-hmm.
When the puck goes over the glass, there is no discretion.
Yeah.
It's whether or not the puck went over the glass cleanly, and then it's cut and try. If it did, then it's a penalty. So if nothing else, you're making the argument for this black and white penalty that we currently have in the league to have nuance, to allow the referees to say, hey, this puck was on edge, the ice is crappy, I don't believe this player tried to intentionally delay the game.
Yeah.
So if you want to do that, that's fine. If you want to make it another judgment call, that's fine. I just think as is, penalizing players for mistakes, for chippy ice, for pucks on edge, when they're clearly not trying to put the puck over the glass, I think you make it a judgment call. And you make it a judgment call for other forms of this thing, like in the series against the Rangers, when Carl Alsner deflected the puck with the shaft of his stick over the glass, knowing exactly what he was trying to do in that instance.
Mm-hmm.
Give him a penalty for it. You know what he's doing. You could see it. It's not a mistake.
Yeah.
So,
and if you want, and how about this one then? If you want to call a delay a game, how about guys who deliberately throw the puck into the bench, knowing you can't get a call?
Right.
Like, that to me is more of a delay of game. When you fire it deliberately into the bench, knowing you're not going to get a call, then the guy, like last night with Mark Edward Vlasic, who flipped it, trying to get it off the glass, and instead it went over.
Right. I get the hypocrisy in someone who rails against referees calling games on their own time and game management, like all that crap. Like, in theory, there should be more cut and dry calls in hockey, because then you take the referees out of the equation. But in this case, the cut and dryness of it, I think, is unfair to players. I think it genuinely is a way to penalize, like I said, a human error, a mistake.
To me, it's unfair to the game, because at that moment, that player should not have gone to the box, and that power play shouldn't have been a 5-on-3.
And like I think it was Chris Therrien said this on NBC last night, no worse feeling. No worse feeling in the world.
Oh, God.
You could poke, you could hold, you could do whatever. At least you're trying to do something to help your team. In this case, it's just a mistake that's penalized and you watch your team lose.
To that point, let me ask you this then. If you're Mark Edward Vlasic, okay, if you didn't shoot the puck over the glass, but let's say you slashed Jeff Carter or held Jeff Carter a little bit or hooked Jeff Carter a little bit, given the nature of what was happening at that time and that late state of the game, is Mark Edward Vlasic getting called? Probably not.
Yeah.
But puck over the glass? Yes. It's an automatic call.
Ryan Thomas writes in, guys, yes, the way that last night's game ended was painful and as shitty as the penalty was. Logan Couture failed to clear on the 5-on-3, and Joe Pavelski got lazy on Lewis's goal.
That's true.
I had enough faith in the PK to weather the storm, even when the Kings would have pulled quick for an extra attacker. I've seen the Sharks fall behind 2-0 several times before, and this is the best I have felt after two opening losses in a series of my life. The Sharks have controlled the play for the most part, and they figured out that getting traffic around and in front of quick was a recipe for success. It's a weird not wanting to jump off a cliff at this point feeling. Hey.
Yeah.
You know?
The Logan Couture point is a great one, because he had that chance to get it out and he didn't. I mean, he switched, was it backhand to forehand or forehand to backhand and tried to get it out. And that little sort of split second of doing that, cost him the ability to clear the zone.
Jonathan Cable speaks to the game management on this one. Aren't puck over the glass calls worse in the playoffs when refs put away their whistles? It's the only penalty called. That's actually a pretty fair point, especially when you get to overtime. Sometimes it seems like it's the only one they call. Chris Cooper, instead of giving a penalty, why don't you treat dumping the puck over the glass exactly like icing? I completely agree. I think that's exactly what they should do. Rob Fado, everyone loves the delay of game penalty until it happens to their own team.
That is
a universal truth.
That's true, because nothing the hometown fans like to do when a puck goes over the glass off the opposition stick is stand up and point.
Yep.
It's a weird new thing. I should say new thing in hockey in 2005. That, hey, everybody does it. Hey, the whole bench stands up. The whole stadium stands up when it happens in your rink.
Yep. Indeed.
Ah.
Okay, bottom line, you think the Sharks come back or no?
They have a shot, but LA is just playing too good. This is that scary LA team. This is that scary LA team with, four lines that can do everything. And Drew Doughty is playing some of the best hockey we've ever seen him play, and so is Voinov. We talked about it yesterday and how they're managing their minutes on that blue line. Even Buzzin's playing, like everybody on that team. This is going to be a tough team for anybody to stop. Now so more than ever. And I've only been able to say this at this point this year. I think this team is going to win the Stanley Cup again. That's how good they look.
Interesting.
And they're big. They're big. Like, they got size. They got skill. They got great goaltending. All-star defenseman. Jesus.
I think they come back. I think they come back to even the series at the very least.
I hope so, because it could be a good one. I hope so.
Yeah, indeed. Question of the day, Jack Adams. The Jack Adams Award nominees were announced today. They are... Paul McLean of the Ottawa Senators.
The Walrus guy?
The Walrus, the bug-eyed Walrus.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
Bruce Boudreau of the Anaheim Ducks.
Gabby, yeah.
And
the old Joel, Paul, the old Paul McLean. Bruce Boudreau.
Joel Quenneville of the Chicago Blackhawks. Getting the nomination that we all like to see, which is the coach of the really, really good team who becomes an excellent team, getting recognition along with the guy coaching the injury devastated, oh my goodness, they almost missed the playoffs team, who always gets nominated. It is so hard to be successful in this league and to have the success that the Blackhawks were on pace for 131 points.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Pretty scary. And as a lot of people have pointed out, most notably Scotty Bowman, but then again, consider the source and consider who he was coaching. You know, some people have said coaching a team of traveling all-stars is a lot harder than coaching guys who are young and hungry and have been, you know, beaten down. Those guys are easier to motivate than a team that's laden with superstars.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of Chicago, it's been a nice run, eh? Selke, Lady Bing, Jack Adams, Calder, and they won the Jennings. Not a bad little sort of trophy haul.
Well, here. You know, no heart, though. That's what they wanted. They wanted Taves up for the heart, and they didn't get them.
Didn't get that. That's a good point.
So, question of the day, tell us about the Jack Adams field. Who should win? Who should have won? If there's somebody you don't believe you believe should have been nominated that wasn't. This is from Mike. Paul McLean, the Senators have not had the best record in the NHL, but they did still make the playoffs and did so without their number one center in Spezza, Carlson out for 10 weeks, and other key players out of the lineup as well. Random Penguin, Ramzi
Abid. Yeah. No way. Ramzi Abid?
Well, that's pretty good.
Fast. Yeah, good. We haven't had a Ramzi Abid Random Penguin yet. Thank you.
Yeah, I think McLean is a slam dunk. I think Quenneville is a slam dunk. The guy that I question is Boudreau, and for one reason. If you want to say McLean is in the slot where he's the guy who took an injury-laden team to the playoffs, or kept them in the playoffs despite their injuries, I should say, and Quenneville's the guy who drove the ship to the best record in hockey, the historic season, the point streak, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. The other slot that's available is the coach who made the most of a situation we all thought was not going to be so good. So McLean's the adversity guy. Quenneville's the winner. Boudreau is the guy who took a Ducks team that a lot of us had outside the playoffs and made them a division champion. What?
Michel Therrien?
Oh, that you've spoiler warning.
Oh, sorry.
Merrick.
Okay. Apologies.
There is another coach, as Merrick just mentioned, that did the same thing. And in my eyes, It's almost the same. It's a parallel. I mean, it's parallel lives. Boudreau's offensive system fit the personnel perfectly, changed the personality of the team, activated the defense, increased the scoring across the board. The Ducks were a much better team because Bruce Boudreau became a division champion. I think the Canadiens were worse off coming into the season as far as the personnel in the roster, as far as their place in life, as far as everybody thinking they were going to be a lottery team this year. And Therrien did the same thing. He instilled his personality into that roster. They became a grittier team. They became a rougher team. They won a difficult division to win in my eyes in the Northeast. If the two coaches did essentially the same thing, I think what Therrien did was more impressive than what Boudreau did personally.
And that's how many people in Montreal feel, too. From 15 to 2, right?
Yeah.
And a couple of rookies in Alexander Galchenyuk and Brendan Gallagher. And then what else? Michael Ryder, who they got for Eric Cole. They brought in Brandon Prust. I mean, essentially, it's the exact same team. Now, the assistants are different. And I know I always go out of my way to praise them, but I think the contributions of Gerard Gallant on that Montreal bench, he's not given enough praise for it.
Right,
but I'm with you. I'm right with you with Michel Therrien. Even though he did implode in the playoffs, and he turned into that old Michel Therrien. Sorry, the Mike Therrien, as he liked to be called when he was coaching Pittsburgh. Michel back when he's in Quebec, he turned into that old Mike Therrien again in the playoffs. But this thing's not voted on based on the playoffs. You know, the other guy. Here's another interesting one as well. What do you do with Todd Richards? How does he become part of the conversation?
It's easy. You put him in the same slot as Randy Carlyle, which is that a hot goaltender does not necessarily mean a good coach.
Show me a good goaltender, I'll show you a good coach.
Yeah,
well,
precisely.
Boudreau had two. McLean had two. You could argue three if you throw in Ben Bishop.
Quenneville had two.
And Quenneville had two as well. But it wasn't because of the goaltender.
But the Blue Jackets. But the Blue Jackets' success is directly tied to the goaltender.
Mm-hmm. But again, how many times have you said this? Show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach. Those are the two positions that are inextricably linked.
I think Therrien was robbed. I would have put him in my top three along with Quenneville and with McLean. Who should win? Quenneville should win. Quenneville coached a team on pace for 131 points.
Exactly.
And all due respect to what the job McLean did, McLean's giant heavy lifting was getting a playoff team to be a playoff team again. Which isn't even as impressive in my eyes as what Therrien did. No. But I understand the job that McLean did. The injuries were incredible. The amount of talent that was on the sideline, including his starting goaltender, was massive.
Yeah, he's
I think he will win the award, but I think Quenneville should win the award.
To me, all about the talent with that Ottawa Senators organization, to me, comes all the way back to Brian Murray. Like, Brian Murray has done – I know I always sing the praise of Murray, but for good reason. Brian Murray has done such a great job stocking that franchise. You know, filling up the Binghamton Senators and, you know, the Calder Cup run they had a couple of years ago really helped a lot of those guys. The trade for Ben Bishop last year, showing up the depth in the net mining position. Like, Brian Murray's done a great job insulating this team as they tried to rebuild. Let's not forget, this is a team that's supposed to be going through a rebuilding process right now. And they've done a really nice job of it. And you can start to see with, you know, the Mika Zibanejad, Jacob Silfverberg, these types of players that are on the horizon and more coming. Stefan Nason of the Plymouth Whalers, guys that are coming. For the Ottawa Senators, he's done a great job of both making sure they're competitive right now and making sure there are guys that can plug and play if the big guys go down. To me, the Ottawa Senators are more about Brian Murray, with all due respect to the coach, than it is about Paul McLean. I give it to Joel Quenneville as well.
Oh, you would?
I'd give it to Quenneville. Yeah, I'd give it to Quenneville.
Certainly putting the versus Merrick versus Zinsky.
Well, listen, you can look at Chicago and say, oh, yeah, wow, he was the head coach of the All-Star team. Yeah, it's pretty simple. Anybody can coach that. Not a chance. No way, man. That's hard. That's a tough gig when you have that many superstar players and superstar egos that come along with it. That's tough. That's hard.
One more before a Friday favorite from Mike Barba. I was going to say why I think Boudreau should win the Jack Adams, but I missed yesterday's QOD and like it better, so I'm going to answer that. I'd like to see the Gordie Howe trophy to the player who scores the most goals and assists while recording the most fights. Hello, Wayne Simmons, 15 goals, 17 assists, 5 fights.
I
just love
that.
Just undercut the question of the day.
Whatever. Here's what I really
want. All right, it's time for a
answer.
Friday. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Time for a Friday favorite, everybody. It's Game Show Friday. Joining us down the line from Nanaimo, British Columbia. Did I say that correctly?
Nanaimo. Home of the Nanaimo Bars.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the Nanaimo Clippers.
Yeah, there you go.
BCJHL.
He is Gerald Morton, and he joins us here on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast. Hello, sir. How are you?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, do you go to Clippers games?
I work at the rink, so yes.
Oh, no way. And I've never been to that rink. Describe, for those who have never been, which includes myself, the rink and the team.
Frank Crane's a decent old barn. It was built in the 70s. It's, it's fine. It's a sort of older BCHL arena. It seats about 3,500 if with standing room. But we used to have a great old barn downtown, the Civic Arena, which was built in the 40s. Mm-hmm. And, one of those sort of like civic palaces that was built all around the war, and that was a magnificent old beast, but it got torn down a few years ago.
And that BCJHL.
Number of.
Quick point. Like, of all the tier two loops in all of Canada, that British Columbia League consistently, and I'm an OJ guy, OJHL, but the BC Junior Loop is the finest in Canada, hands down, as you very well know, Gerald. It's true. It's the best. It is the finest hockey as far as tier two hockey goes.
Gerald, which number is higher, the number of people who have had sex in that arena or that were murdered in that arena?
I'm going to go with sex.
Okay.
There's been a few paralyzations, but no murders I know of.
Good thing then, sir. All right.
Exactly. All right, Gerald. Well, you are joining us on the day on which the Jack Adams Award nominees were announced by the National Hockey League. And that means that you are going to be playing a Jack Adams-centric game show Friday, sir.
All right.
10 questions as usual, and we demand a D average from our listeners because you are incredibly average. And again, when we get prizes, your name will be on an ever-increasing list for those prizes, and we will eventually give them to you.
Yeah. All right, I look forward to.
Are you ready to play Jack? Are you?
Please, yes. Well, no, you will not. You're going to do quite well. Are you ready to play Game Show Friday, Jack Adams Edition, sir?
You bet.
All right, awesome. Question number one is from Quizmaster Merrick. The other nine questions are from Quizmaster Wyszynski.
Actually, Gerald, I would like, because I told Greg that I wanted to ask you the first question. I didn't have time to do questions today, so Greg did all of them, except for one. But I wanted, actually, what I want is Greg to ask you this question doing his best Jeff Merrick impression of asking a question on Game Show Friday. You picking up what I'm putting down? Greg's gonna ask you this question that I came up with, but he's going to do it in my voice and my style. Okay?
This is the first unofficial Jeff Merrick impression that I've done on the podcast. Ready?
Awesome.
Gerald, off the hop, who was Jack Adams?
Yeah! Just like, I would say it that way, too. Like a real prick, too. All right, that's good.
I know he played for a few teams in the NHL, Canadian guy, but mostly known for his, like, he was in Detroit in the Detroit organization for, like, 30-something years.
Yep, you got it. He played for the...
That's right.
As a matter of fact, he played neighboring Nanaimo. He played with the Vancouver Millionaires in early 20s. Then, yeah, but he's more known for running the Detroit Red Wings. Good for you. One for one.
Detroit Red Wings head coach from 1932 all the way through 1947.
Oh, so I remember it well.
A wonderful run. Yeah, it was a good run for him. All right, so you got that one. So you're off to a strong start. The mic is passed over now to Quizmaster Wyszynski.
All yours.
We continue down the Red Wings road here with the Jack Adams. Gerald, how many Jack Adams awards has Mike Babcock won?
Oh, has he won any? I'm going to say zero.
You're right. Good for you.
You are correct, sir. Robbed. Again, and then we talked about that with Quenneville. Like, you know, it's harder to get credit for shepherding a winning team to greater heights. Babcock does that. He was nominated once, I think, and that was it. And it's a shame and a sham that he did not win. That said, Gerald, how many Jack Adams awards has Tom Watt won?
Tom Watt Hockey School, which once housed a very young Jeff Merrick at Virginia College.
I'll say one.
You got it.
You are correct. You are correct. One Conn Smythe. I'm sorry. One Jack Adams, rather, for Tom Watt. 1981-82 Winnipeg Jets. So we mentioned this, obviously, to make the point even clearer. Mike Babcock has no Jack Adams, and Tom Watt has one. Question number four, sir.
Tom Watt's clearly a better coach than Mike Babcock ever was.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. As voted on by the broadcasters. Yes. How many coaches who won the President's Trophy, whose teams won the President's Trophy, have also won the Jack Adams? How many coaches whose teams have won the President's Trophy, best overall record in the National Hockey League, have also won the Jack Adams?
Yeah, it's not that many, as we've discussed with Quenneville. They like to, they like voting in surprise teams that were supposed to be god-awful but did okay. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to say four.
It's actually more than that. It's actually seven.
The coaches that won
both the Presidents and the Jack Adams: Scotty Bowman, Al Arbor, Pat Quinn, Mike Keenan, Glenn Sather, Bowman again with the 95-96 Wings, and Joel Quenneville, the 99-2000 St. Louis Blues.
Mm. All right.
Okay, so that was your first loss on the questions. That's right, though. You're cruising along. Question number five. This coach won the Jack Adams in 1996-97 for the Buffalo Sabres, but hasn't coached in the National Hockey League since 2008. Name him.
Oh, yeah. I would love to hear the story of this sometime. I don't think Merrick can tell it on the air, but Ted Nolan.
That's correct.
Oh, I don't think Merrick could tell it on the air because I think there's like 1,000 different versions of that story.
Oh, Ted Nolan? I just heard it was a power play to get sort of more stroke away from John Mucklin. The general manager didn't like that. Thank you very much. And he was, by the way, offered a contract after that Jack Adams year, but he turned it down. But I think it was one of those contracts where, you know, it was one of those contracts that was, we're going to offer you this contract knowing full well you're not going to accept it because it's sort of embarrassingly low percent of your pedigree.
Yeah. Question number seven we're up to. Oh, I'm sorry. No, question number six, rather. How many coaches who replaced other coaches won the Jack Adams that season? So we're looking for in-season replacement coaches who won the Jack Adams.
Ooh, I'm going to randomly pick a number between 1 and 10 and go 5.
You're so close.
So close, man. The answer is 4.
Oh.
Scotty Bowman in 76, 77. Bill Barber, 2000, 2001. Then you go Bruce Boudreau, 2007, 2008. And most recently, Ken Hitchcock, last year for the St. Louis Blues, who replaced Davis Payne and won the Jack Adams. So there you go.
These are hard questions.
Close. Call Quizmaster Merritt.
They are.
Honestly.
They are.
How dare you? They only get tougher. Only 3 coaches have won the Jack Adams and the Stanley Cup in the same season. Can you name 2 of them, Gerald? Three coaches have won the Jack and the Cup in the same season.
Yeah.
Name 2 of them.
2 from the 70s, 1 from the 2000s.
Ooh. 2000s has got to be, that's Torts.
Correct.
70s. I'm going to say...
I'll give you a hint. There's probably a name you could throw out there that when it comes to coaches of the year is probably a safe bet.
Scotty Bowman?
Correct.
the Fog is the other one from 74.
Yeah, 77 with Bowman with the Montreal Canadiens. So, yeah, that's a safe bet. When in doubt.
Scott Bowman.
Yeah.
Question number 8. Who won the most Jack Adams awards?
Oh, noted not Hall of Famer Pat Burns.
That's
right.
You got
it. And that's you've mentioned Pat Burns, which of course means that we must reiterate, F the Hall of Fame selection committee, F them up their dumbasses for not putting Pat Burns in the Hall of Fame. It's a decision and a mistake that needs to be rectified, and hopefully the new crop of selection committee people does so, because there is no goddamn reason why Pat Burns shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
Petty feuds that still get played out in the Hall of Fame. Embarrassing.
Question number 9. The St. Louis Blues have won the Jack 4 times. 4 different coaches for the St. Louis Blues of all teams, have won the Jack Adams Award. There's 4 of them. We're looking for 3 of them. Can you name them?
Oh, Quenneville, Hitchcock, and...
One for 90-91, the other one for 80-81.
One is still coaching.
90-91.
One of them is still a coach, not necessarily in the NHL.
Where you go? 5.
Oh, Keenan.
4. No. 90-91 was Brian Sutter, and 80-81, as Merrick was trying to hint you, Red Berenson.
Yeah, Michigan.
Oh, Red, of course.
Yeah.
That was my next guess.
Of course.
Not at all.
Okay. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 correct. So this is icing on the cake time. And I think this is the most challenging of the questions, so gird your loins.
All right.
In 1975-76, this man won the Jack Adams. We're not sure what suit jacket he wore to the ceremony, but we do know he probably said something about Europeans or commies in his speech. Name him.
Oh, the ever lovable Don Cherry.
Donald F. Cherry, 1975-76. Jack Adams winner for the Boston Bruins. You're correct, sir. You get 7 correct, and you are the big wiener on Game Show Friday. Congratulations.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, attaboy. So we're going to add you to the list, sir. And whatever prize we do end up coming up with, you will be given one of them, my good man. Anything to promote or mention on today's podcast? You want to talk about the Nanaimo Clippers, the rink, anything personal about yourself, a website, a blog, a Twitter feed, anything?
Sure, you got 15, 20 minutes to talk about my relationship with my wife.
Sure, I mean, yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
I like that, sure.
No, joking. Well, my Twitter feed's not terribly exciting, but if you feel like it, it's at Buddy Dude Guy.
I like that.
And every once in a while, I'll tweet out a post. I've written a couple posts for hockey blogs, notably Puck Daddy.
Right.
That's right. You have been. You've pinch hit for us before.
And, a buddy of mine who is one of the many guys who played junior, but that's where his dreams died, now is a photographer, has a really sharp website and photography company called ericmascotte.com, MASSICOTTE. Mm-hmm. It's definitely worth a look. And, yeah, give a shout-out to one of the hockey players trying to do something else with his life.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Hey, well, Gerald, congratulations on being the big winner today. You did a heck of a job, and we will talk to you down the line. We'll keep sending in the stuff there, and we will keep looking at it.
All right.
Thanks, Gerald.
Thanks, guys.
Great job. Dude knew his stuff, eh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are some hard questions, man. Like, the questions about numbers, like, how many, Eric Bolton just agreed to a one-year deal with the Islanders.
Yep. Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
There you go.
Got a note from the Islanders. Okay. Yeah, like, some of the questions, like, how many coaches won the President's Trophy, also won the Jack? That's hard. You got to know, like, when does the Jack Adams Award goes back to 73? 70, yeah, because Fogg was the first one to win it. That's tough, man.
Yeah.
That's hard. Yeah. I'm supposed to be the tough one here.
I thought it was a fair. He won.
I know he was good.
A lesser opponent may not necessarily have won. Brad Zegas writes in. What about Capuano? It was a bumper crop for good coaches this year, man. Like, you could make an argument for Cap. You could make an argument for Mike Yeo. Babcock, I think, deserves some praise for what he did with the Wings in the first Lidstrom-less year in many moons. The one that I go back to is, I think, Therrien was the guy who deserved that third spot. But you could make the argument for any number of guys, and I think Capuano is one of them for sure.
Yeah,
because again, like, McLean did a hell of a job, but that's taking a playoff team back to the playoffs. The Islanders haven't been in the playoffs since what, 08, 07, somewhere around there.
I think it was 06, wasn't it?
Okay, sure.
That Islanders Buffalo Sabres series, I think.
Lyerly writes in, co-coach of the year Larry Robinson. McLellan has been made great. Has been made a great coach by having LR running the PK up from 29th to 6th. Same can be said for Pete DeBoer last year with Adam Oates running the power play and Larry Robinson running the PK, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
Do you think it should be an award for assistant coaches?
Yep. That'd be a good award. That, when you're harkening back to yesterday's show.
I know. But how you do it.
Yeah.
How you judge it.
Dello writes in, cool, Wyshynski doesn't believe in PDO. Boudreau turned the Ducks around. I'm not saying he didn't. I just think in both cases, Boudreau and Therrien did tangible things for their teams based on the style of the system they play, based on personality. I think they both did essentially the same thing, but I think Therrien did more heavy lifting. It's not to say Boudreau doesn't deserve a nomination. Mm-hmm. I would just have him fourth on my ballot.
You think Boudreau doesn't get get a lot of consideration because, you know, he does have the reputation of being the open and close the door coach. Like, just let them play. Let them be hockey players. Like, he doesn't over... The last thing Gabby's going to be accused of is overcoaching, which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
He has that reputation, but I also think he's also seen as the guy, one of the few guys in this league that can implement an offensive system and have it be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can look at the Ducks numbers, be it the traditional stats or the advanced stats, and see the difference that he made by his system versus the way they played under Carlisle, for sure.
That is true. It is the hardest thing to coach is goals. The easiest thing to coach is defense. That's completely true. Because the game is offensively defensive oriented.
Yep.
Actually, Dello submitted another one too, to the puck over the glass conversation. The puck over the glass thing is curiously exactly like when players think there's an offside / foul in soccer. Everyone's arm goes up in the air. It's bizarre. It's the only penalty it happens on.
Yeah. That's interesting. Interesting. So there you go. That's the show.
Oh, by the way, yes. Adam Caldwell says, your Two Live Crew reference is completely valid and gives you more hip-hop cred than a lazy SMA lot ref. Oh, Sir Mix-a-Lot reference. Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go.
Well, it's not a lazy one.
It's just wrong. I just wrong.
Sir Mix-a-Lot was about butts, and Two Live Crew was about other orifices.
That's the best. If you can pull it off, by the way, and I got a buddy of mine that can. Like, he can just take the mic and go out into the crowd. Nothing brings the crowd down at karaoke like I like big butts.
Mm.
It is the best karaoke tune. Outside of me doing Johnny Rivers' Secret Agent Man, yo.
Is that your jam?
That's my tune. That's my karaoke. It's the only one that I can do with any comfort and probably about zero style. Johnny Rivers, Secret Agent Man. Look it up. That's me. That's my speed.
Agent Man.
That's the one. You know it. Okay, good.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Oh, no, I know that. I know that song for sure.
Do you have one? Do you have a karaoke fave?
I do. I do Blister in the Sun by the Flame, by the Violent Femmes. And I did some Cake last time. That's not a difficult one to sing. But I have one, but it requires a female participant, sir.
Which one is that?
I'd be Wannabe by the Spice Girls.
And
I sing it in a falsetto.
I thought you were going to say, like, Rock Lobster. Actually, Rock Lobster would be a pretty good one.
I mentioned the Flaming Lips because tonight I am headed with the lady to the Googa Mooga Festival in Brooklyn. It's a food and music festival where the Lips and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs are playing, so I'm very excited about that.
You love the Flaming Lips, don't you?
I do. I'm a huge Lips fan. Like their older stuff better than their newer stuff.
Yeah, then they sold out, eh? Yeah.
It's not so much sold out, but they got a little. They got a little too art.
Corners.
Art.
Okay, like I like Big Butts. Mm. It is the best karaoke tune. Outside of me doing Johnny Rivers' Secret Agent Man, yo.
Is that your jam?
That's my tune. That's my karaoke. It's the only one that I can do with any comfort. And probably about zero style. Johnny Rivers, Secret Agent Man. Look it up. That's me. That's my speed.
Agent Man.
That's the one. You know it. Okay, good.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Oh, no, I know that. I know that song for sure.
Do you have one? Do you have a karaoke fave?
I do Blister in the Sun by the Violent Femmes. And I did some Cake last time. That's not a difficult one to sing. But I have one, but it requires a female participant, sir.
Which one is that?
I'd be Wannabe by the Spice Girls.
And
I sing it in a falsetto.
I thought you were going to say like Rock Lobster. Actually, Rock Lobster would be a pretty good one.
I mentioned the Flaming Lips because tonight I am headed with the lady to the Googa Mooga Festival in Brooklyn. It's a food and music festival where the Lips and the Yeah Yeah Yeahs are playing, so I'm very excited about that.
You love the Flaming Lips, don't you?
I do. I'm a huge Lips fan. Like their older stuff better than their newer stuff.
Yeah, too. Then they sold out, eh? Yeah.
It's not so much sold out, but they got a little too art rocky kind of thing. They found what worked on Yashimi and then they tried to apply it to other stuff and it didn't necessarily work the way. So anyway, there's a run for the Lips between Transmissions from the Satellite Heart and Clouds Taste Metallic. That's my favorite era because that's when I got into them. Crunchy guitars along with some psychedelic stuff, and that's kind of my bag with them. But their later stuff's good too.
I like when they bring the mascots on stage.
That's also a good time too. We can see that today.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Jeff Merrick of Sports Net tonight on Hockey Central, 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock, wrapping up two games we'll be looking at tonight. One, the Ottawa Senators-Pittsburgh Penguins game, and then tonight, Greg Wyshynski, I know you're excited about this one, on Sportsnet, game one of the Memorial Cup, host Saskatoon Blades taking on the London Knights. We'll be covering that one on Hockey Central tonight, 11 o'clock and 1 Eastern. Yeah, man. It's my favorite tournament. It's my favorite. I love the Memorial Cup like no other.
There you go.
Yeah. Happy time,
Christmas morning.
Yeah, it is. It is.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Phil Bork for hopping on to talk about the Penguins.
And talking about the Penguins, too.
Jesus Christ, right? We will actually talk to you on Tuesday. Monday is a holiday in Canada.
Yeah, man. It's May 2 for a weekend.
Yeah, I remember we talked about this last year. I still don't understand what the hell it means.
It's Victoria. It's Victoria Day weekend. For Queen Victoria.
Okay. Right, okay. Victoria Day.
Yeah.
Sure. And then obviously the following Monday, there'll be no show because I will be drunk at a Mets game.
What holiday is that celebrating?
That's National Drunk at a Mets Game Day.
Ah,
everybody
very good.
Converges on Citi Field and gets... loaded in the park. Although I hear it's harder to get drunk at a Mets game because they are policing the parking lots pretty vigilantly about beer. So I don't know. They're a bunch of killjoys. Figure as a Mets fan, it's your God-given right to be as tanked as possible.
You need something.
But not so much. All right, everybody. Thanks for a great show. And we will talk to you on Tuesday. Okay, bye.